Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Wait a minute, what am I doing? Two men in a one. Two friends from film school, one who graduated, one who did, and they decided to make a podcast. Okay, this has never been done before, right? Okay. This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.
But yeah, I'm getting over being sick. I had a cold this weekend, and now it's just like my voice decided to go kaput.
Well, I had the same thing happen to me. I went to see a play, but the entire time someone behind me was like, and like that was slightly less annoying than the woman who was crying the entire time. But like, I was like, oh, I'm going to get sick. Because I'm at a point in my life where if I get sick, I know exactly who did it. Because I work from home. I go to like stores late at night. I don't run into people. So like, if I get sick, I'm going to whump you. I'm going to squeeze your head like an egg.
Okay, sure.
You can ask my mom. It really hurts. She said I looked like I had been working out. I'm like, yeah, look how strong I am. And this was at Thanksgiving. And I grabbed the top of her head with my one hand and went, and she was like, ow, that hurts. I'm like an egg. Welcome to the Two Men in a Movie podcast, where each week one man shows another man a movie he can't believe he hasn't seen. As always, I'm your mother's head squeezing super strong boy who sounds like a frog host, Matthew Olenchek, joined as always by my just breaching the throes of puberty co-host Harrison Poole. Not a work husband this week, because that would be, I don't think Romeo and Juliet laws apply here. I think age gap would be too great.
Oh my god, it's the same age gap.
If you were 16 and I'm 30.
Okay, but I'm not 16.
You're just breaching puberty. You're like 15?
I'm still 27.
This week you're a boy.
There's still like 2.5 years between us.
You're a little boy.
Okay. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Fucking watch The Worm, dude. We watched Dune this week, dude.
Yeah.
The fucking Worm.
Yes, The Worm was exciting.
You don't even know, dude. Because we're going to be doing part two, obviously. I saw that in IMAX, and afterwards, me and the person I went with had to sit in the car for a bit before we like left the theater. Because being in the IMAX theater with The Worm is a lot.
Yeah, I will say, I think my biggest critique of this movie is that I don't think it works not in an IMAX theater.
I think it does.
I don't think it works to the full effect that Villeneuve wants it to work. Yeah. Had I seen this movie in theaters in IMAX, I genuinely think I would have been blown away. Watching this in my living room on my TV with the lights off, like as much of experiencing the movie as I possibly can, but not in a theater like with surround sound. I liked it. Like, I like this movie. It mostly works.
Wild.
It doesn't totally click for me, but like I had a fine time.
I don't know. I remember after seeing this movie being like, cinema's back. And I didn't see the first one in theaters. I didn't get a chance to go. I watched it in my living room with the lights off. And I was like, oh, fuck, cinema's back. Like, we're actually getting something that's like crafted by a director who gives a fucking shit.
Sure.
And on a level that like, you know, on a bigger scale. Because there's always been like smaller, like even this, I wouldn't necessarily call A24 small, but like those are not movies that necessarily get as many people watching them. Mm-hmm. Where like Dune was like a blockbuster.
Absolutely.
And I'm like, oh fuck, we actually have a blockbuster that's like,
like an auteur movie.
Yeah, like well made again.
Yeah. I respect this movie. I understand what people see in it. It all comes back to, I'm not a hard sci-fi guy, and it feels like 2.5 hours of setup. It feels like 2.5 hours of beautiful shots.
It's half of a book.
He
would love it if Paul Atreides was played by Jack Black. Nice. He'd be like, best movie ever. I'm going to watch it 3 times a day.
I would not. It's not. I'm not saying Jack Black would be better. I am saying I like Chalamet. fine enough. I can't, at least in this movie, maybe in the other ones, like, now that we have the setup, he can pay off and, like, be the character. I can't take Timothée Chalamet seriously in this movie.
In what way?
Oh, my God. There's a Letterboxd review that perfectly sums it up. That's like, Timothée Chalamet looks like he knows too much about TikTok. Is, like, so 21st century rich elitist American.
So you're saying he has a, in the movie, you're saying that his Paul Atreides has an old face.
What?
Because this movie's in the future.
Okay.
So maybe you're right about TikTok.
He just has this.
This is a post-TikTok world by its very definition.
Yes. And maybe, again, maybe in the second one, I'll be more into the character. He just seems so, I'm struggling to find the word.
See, he looks like someone I could believe would be European nobility. So I think he works in this movie.
I have not seen the Bob Dylan movie, but I think from the trailers, he works better as Bob Dylan. I think he looks more like a wannabe beat poet than he does.
Oh, because like, he's in, nobility. Is it The King he's in? What, is that the movie where Robert Pattinson, where he plays the one English king?
I don't.
When they give him that bowl cut, I look at him and I'm like, that looks like the result of like, not necessarily inbreeding, but very selective breeding over many generations. Okay. The weird, not weird, there's like a very distinctive like nobility face that European nobles tended to have in the later eras of feudalism, which is one of the reasons I love this movie. It combines like three, and just Dune in general, it combines like three of my favorite things, which is like I love sci-fi, I love weird religion shit, and I love like late era feudalism, like okay. The Holy Roman Empire era, like the weird like when feudalism got more political,
sure,
and so it became this huge just mess. I'm like, that's when politics peaked.
When this movie was telling a story and was not just beautiful shots, it worked. Like the last 45 minutes works the best for me out of like the entirety of the movie. It feels like it's like just under 2 hours of setup for 45 minutes of better setup, if that makes sense. Like,
I know it exactly halfway through the movie is when his dad gets captured.
Yes.
You know, it is, I guess it is, yeah, because he's doing what David Lynch didn't do. That's why David Lynch's Dune suffers towards the end of the movie, is that he was like, I have to split this book up into two movies. There's no way I can turn this into one movie.
Right when Duncan starts fighting, like, literally it's Duncan's salute and then on is like when the movie really takes off for me.
But what about all the politicking?
I don't care. I don't care about, like, I don't care about space politicking. Sorry? Okay, is that all you're going to do?
Yeah, it's going to be the next hour. It's just me making that noise. I don't know. It's a wild take, in my opinion.
What?
It's the same take of why the Jack Black being the greatest actor of all time is a wild take to me, is because I've had people who just don't like Dune. I haven't met someone who's like, it was decent.
Yeah, it's fine. It's very pretty. I don't take most of the actors seriously in their roles. To bring it back to the Jack Black thing, what Jack Black does the best out of anyone for me, and he does the Jimmy Stewart thing where it doesn't feel like he's acting, and not in a chameleon way, just literally in a way where they like plucked this guy and put him in this world. Everyone in this movie feels like they're acting. Like, Oscar Isaac looks like he's playing King the entire time.
I think that's intentional. I mean, it's framed very much as like a theater. I've always viewed it as like the way that everything's kind of set up, that it's the tale of Paul Atreides is like a Shakespearean tragedy along the lines of Hamlet. The book is two things. It's a warning against charismatic messiah figures, and it's the tragedy of knowing your own destiny. But it very much is like a Shakespearean tragedy. And I feel like, in my opinion, if they were trying to do like a really authentic performance where it didn't feel like acting at all, it didn't feel like a movie at all, it would lose some of the theatrical aspect of it, because it very much is this kind of like almost legend being shown to us.
I don't know. I think then, and I think, I don't know. That's just an issue with the medium then, I think. Or not an issue with the medium, but I think that's just a disconnect in the medium then. But
I don't know, because I'd say that Green Knight's very much the same way.
I haven't seen Green Knight.
Really so. Good. I think you can do movies that feel like theatrical productions easily. I don't think there's a inherent disconnect in the medium there.
Okay.
I think movies can be a lot of things.
I agree with you. I don't know. I know Josh Brolin becomes much more of a character in the sequel, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's fine. He's fine in the four scenes he's in this movie, but like he's doing nothing for me personally. It very much felt like they were setting up for something.
I think ideally this movie would be both movies back to back, and you'd be sitting there like not ideally the ideal like human watching experience, but the best way to experience this movie, I do think, is watching it like straight through. Because it really is one movie, more so than a lot of like part ones and part twos.
Okay.
And I will say because like I think everyone's doing well. Like I believe everyone's performances. The one thing that the thing you're having with Timothy Chalamet, I have with Zendaya.
I have the same thing with her. Yes, he's just Timothy Chalamet's the lead of this movie.
And I think it's with her because the only thing I'd seen her in beforehand was The Greatest Showman. So it was like, that's the person from The Greatest Showman, where I had never seen Timothy Chalamet in anything.
Oh, really? Okay. Because I'd seen
him. I was aware he existed and was apparently good. And I saw some of his takes on video games, but I'd never seen him act before, really in anything.
Okay.
So I think having this fresh, just pure Timothy Chalamet experience with like almost no preconceived notions, like he fit for me.
That's fair. I look at Timothy Chalamet and I see an in NYU arts kid. Like I don't see like this messiah figure acting whatever. I literally see like a theater kid pretending to play a part in a way that like, and I guess if we're viewing this as more of a Shakespearean theater piece than like. Like it's a movie, but like more of a Shakespearean theater piece. I guess his performance fits. I don't know. It just, from that lens, I am far more forgiving of this movie.
Because I do think, what's his fucking, how do you say his god, Paul
Atreides?
No, the director.
Denis Villeneuve?
I keep trying to call him Paul for some reason. I think it's because I think of Paul Atreides. Yeah, Denis. A lot of his movies are like that, to be fair. I feel are more... There's the slight distancing from like a true, like a lived-in authenticity to it being more of like a theatrical thing. Because I feel kind of... I think to a lesser extent, but I feel the same vibe from like Blade Runner 2047.
That's fair. I've not seen Blade Runner. I've not seen the second Blade Runner movie. It should already be on your list. We've talked about this before.
Gotta double check.
Yeah. I will say this movie got me way more excited to see Dune Part 2 than I was generally to see Dune Part 1. Like, having seen the movie now and, like, gotten into some kind of vibe, I'm like, okay, I can settle in for another 2.5 hours of this if I have to.
If you have to, not just to experience a wonderful example of cinema.
I don't know. I keep coming back to, if I saw this movie in theaters, it would have been life-changing. Because I think the movie wants to feel, like, humongous. And I think it is humongous. But I think not seeing it on the biggest screen possible, there's this weird, like, juxtaposition of, like, this movie wants to be capital I important. And, like, wants to feel capital I important. And then just there's something cutting off, like, just watching it on the television as opposed to when, like, surrounded by the movie. There is a disconnect there.
I think it's lessened. But, like, again, I saw this movie on television for the first time. And I was like, wowie.
Okay.
Pissed myself. I was so excited.
I'm happy for you.
Sat drenched in my piss. Saying, oh, God, the Fremen would hate me for wasting all of this piss. The precious water.
Okay. I don't know. I like Jessica. I forget the actress's name.
Rebecca Ferguson.
Okay, cool. I like her. She's great in this
movie.
She's
nuts.
She's fantastic.
She's like the actress is nuts. She's really good in this movie, and she gets even better. Fucking the actress is nuts in like a real hot way. Woman's goddamn insane.
What?
She's not like woo crazy, but like, you know how like you've normally have like two types of actors in interviews where you have either like the really professional actor or you have like an actor who's just like kind of being themselves.
Sure.
Like I love watching the interviews because you have like Timothée Chalamet, Florence Pugh, and Zendaya, and they'll be like, you know, we're just fucking millennials. We're just chilling. Let's talk about the movie. We're going to derail. It's going to get derailed for a bit because Florence Pugh has been trying to get Timothée Chalamet to try her favorite tea for like ever since they started filming. And he keeps going, I'll get to it. Like every interview she brings it up. And then you have like the other actors who are a bit more like formal about it. Then you have her and she just has this slightly unhinged energy. That's like really hot. Like not like a disconnect from reality way, but like a she's a manic energy to her.
Can you give an example?
Like when they were doing, I think it was with the popcorn buckets, where it was the fucking Dussy.
Sure.
Remember the popcorn buckets that were the Dussy?
The sandworm?
Yeah, there was the Dussy. And everyone else was like, oh God, oh geez. I'm pretty sure she went like on a 3-minute rant about it when they showed it to her. Like everyone else was like, and I think the most we got was like Timothée Chalamet staring Zendaya in the eyes as he just like puts his entire hand in it. But like she like just talked about it for like 5 fucking minutes. And the interviewer is clearly trying to move it on, and she is not ready to move past.
That's so fun. Holy
shit. She just has like this manic energy to her. She's not like saying crazy things, but she's just like wide eyed, kind of shaking a bit.
Oh.
But no, she's real. Again, I think everyone in this movie is really good. Spoilers, we don't get to see more of the Mentat, the albino character. When Timothy's like, hey, and he goes, oh, little boy. The guy rolls his eyes back because they don't have computers in the far future because there was like an AI war. And so they stopped using computers because of that, which I really like about like Dune's world. A lot of this is going to be just talking about, like, about Dune as like concept more than the movie. But to be fair, Dennis, I'm almost calling Paul, Dennis does a very good job of like taking the vibe that the books was giving out, making it not 300 words and just putting it on the screen. Like in the book, like when you see the Sardukans like float down, so many words to describe this. And he's like, nah, it's just weird sci-fi. So they're just going to float down because it takes part like so far in the future that some of their technology seems alien, even though it's human.
Sure.
So like the kind of like floating jetpacks are like, that's really weird looking.
Yeah.
But that's just their future technology. That's like a car to them.
Or like how the helicopter is just like, has dragonfly wings.
Yeah. And it's like, that's weird. But like you see it again, it's like driving a fucking car for anyone who knows how.
Do we see more Dave Bautista in the sequel?
Yeah.
Okay.
Dave Bautista shows up a lot more. Josh Brolin shows up a lot more.
That's fair. I don't like Dave Bautista in this movie even slightly. I don't know. He has the problem that everyone else has just tenfold. Because at least like with the other actors, they like pretended to put regal costumes on him. Dave Bautista, they just painted his skin white. He's just Dave Bautista. I look at him and I'm like, that's the wrestler Dave Bautista.
I will say that was very inspired casting. Mm-hmm. It is very good for the character. It is. You've seen a lot of these characters have depth in the books and the movies. A lot of these characters have layers. You've seen everything you need to know about that character.
Okay.
He is just an angry fucking asshole. He has no depth to him. He's just this piece of shit who's like, bah, 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 yells and kills people. That's all he is.
Okay, nice.
So it's really good casting. Not as good as Bill Skarsgård. Is that the older one?
There's what, like 3 or 4 of them?
He's 3 sons, so 4. Yeah, it's Stellan. I looked up Andor because he's really good.
Oh, I just looked up Dune Skarsgård.
I know he's like top billing in Andor. And I'm like, he's really good in there too. But I just love the big boy.
Yes.
With his weird, again, the weird floating spine thing. That's really good. Yeah,
Stellan Skarsgård's the like the leader of the
Hardukin.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a Baron of the Hardukin.
Yes. Okay. He rips. Yeah. Stellan Skarsgård in this rips.
Stellan does such a good job of managing to convey malice with this character.
Yes.
Which I think is a very hard needle to thread. Because like even if everyone's being a bit more theatrical, I think everyone really plays the parts they're supposed to very well. Mm-hmm. Timothée Chalamet's this kind of kid, which is what, at the beginning of the movie, fucking, or the book, or the story, Paul Atreides is. He's just some fucking kid.
Sure.
There you got the mysterious Lady Jessica. You got Oscar Isaac being this kind of, like, almost too good to be true Duke, which is true to the characters. He's this very honorable man, which is why all the politics happen, is because that's why, because they say in the movie, the whole reason... We'll get to the plot eventually. But the whole reason all this stuff happens is because everyone really likes him.
Yeah.
Because he's just this really honorable, cool fucking dude.
Even when he gets straight up murked by the doctor, there's this moment of like, I understand.
Yeah. Like the reason he's such a threat to the Emperor is because he's just, everyone really fucking respects him. He plays that part. But like they don't have the issue of that they're a giant floating fat man.
Yeah.
So, like, Stellan, like, really has to thread the needle of, I have to make this floating fat man be, like, absolutely menacing.
Yes. And maybe it's because he doesn't even kind of look human. Like, I mean, it's a human form, but, like, the actual, like, when you see him in full, like,
body, he's grotesque.
He's grotesque. The fact that he doesn't, like, appear fully human, I have that suspension of disbelief more with him. But, like, him in Lady Jessica, and weirdly Javier Bardem are probably my three favorite parts in this movie. I forgot it was Javier Bardem.
That's not weird. I will have you know, as I said when you came and asked to watching it, everyone loves Stilgard. He's the Chad. He's an absolutely beautiful character, and he continues to just fucking kill it. He is so good.
I'm so excited.
The next movie is a lot of Stilgard, and it's really
fuck
good.
Yeah, dude. I'm so excited. Then honestly, that sentence just made me infinitely more excited for this
next
movie.
Is a lot of Stilgard, a lot of Lady Jessica, and a good amount of the Baron. Not as much towards the, you get more of it towards the back end,
sure,
but you still have, because again, like, and just Stellan's amazing. The fact that Stellan can radiate menace while being a floating fat man slowly floating out of his chair upwards, and you look at that and you're like, that's a dangerous person. Speaks to how well of a job he's doing, because on the face of it, he's just this rotund boy slowly going out of a chair. You look at it like, that guy's terrifying.
He like floats, and then he has this like really long cape, like it just fucking
my dude. You also get the really good performance of Christopher Walken in the second movie.
Okay.
Who's very subdued, and I think it really works for the Emperor, who's this kind of, he's a character, but he's more of an idea than a character.
Okay. That's the only character in my head that I think Christopher Walken, like, I think a lot of, yeah, a big issue with, like, the King and Paul Atreides is that they're famous actors.
Yeah.
And, like, when you put these famous actors in this movie, I'm just going to see them as these famous actors. No, Christopher Walken as the Emperor sounds fantastic.
I think it also works because you are looking at it, you're like, that's Christopher Walken. Mm-hmm. But he's not reading as Christopher Walken, so you get this kind of, like, otherness going on, which I think works for this Emperor, who, it, like, is a very important character, but is almost a non-character at the same time. He's more of an idea of himself.
Okay. I like Jason Momoa in this part. The whole time I'm watching this movie, I kept thinking it should have been Chris Hemsworth, but I like Jason Momoa in this part.
Yeah, Chris Hemsworth would have done a good job.
I think he does a very good job.
I don't know. He is a bit more of the kind of like, not wilderness vibes to him.
No, but like,
what's
like
the word I'm looking for?
Like a seasoned, like,
yeah, like Chris Hemsworth is more of an outdoors guy, but that's just because he's from Australia.
Yeah,
where like Jason Momoa has kind of like this, like, he loves being outdoors kind of vibe to him, which I think is important for. It's why I think Josh Brolin works so well for Gurney, is because Gurney is a grumpy fucking character.
Yes,
and so you put Josh Brolin says I am smiling, it works. It works so fucking well, because that's like a core part of his character. He's capable of joy, he's capable of grief, but his default state when but not like nothing, no stimulus is upon Gurney. It's just Grump.
Absolutely. He does really well for me. Like, I have no real disconnect. I mean, I see that it's Josh Brolin, and I can't really get over that it's Josh Brolin. But
this is
like,
a unique
I don't know.
This is unique. I have noticed you bring this up a lot in movies. I don't think I've ever seen a movie where I don't look at them, and on some level, I'm like, that's the actor. And every time you bring it up, I'm always like, I don't know, it's a critique that I just bounce off of personally. Cause like, I just have like the opposite thing where like every time I see an actor, I'm like, unless I don't know the actor, but if I know the actor, I'm like, oh, it's Chris Hemsworth.
Oh really? I don't.
Every movie I've ever, like, fucking when I watched, Everything Everywhere All at Once, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, Jamie Lee Curtis.
Interesting.
Oh, sure.
I don't have that. I see the character and like until I see, I only can see the actor.
Yeah, no, every movie I see, like, I have this quantum state where I'm totally, it's not like I'm like, oh, they're not portraying the character well.
No, right.
Like, I'm 100% buying their character, but I'm also like, okay, Jamie Lee Curtis, fucking sell it.
Interesting. I'm not like that at all. Not at all, but you know, like, that's not how my brain works. Like, I watched Furiosa and I watched Chris Hemsworth go. And I was in like, that wasn't Chris Hemsworth.
See, when I saw it in theaters, the whole time I'm like, okay, Chris, doing good after Thor. I'm glad you're out. Okay, Chris.
Fascinating.
Like when I saw Knives Out the entire time, I'm like, they kept you chained to James Bond for two fuck. Ooh, Chris Hemsworth. Okay. Chris Evans. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Like, I just see actors.
I do that when I'm literally watching them. But like, if in a movie, I can easily disconnect.
No, I never. I have clinically inability to it's like I'm watching two layers at the same. It is a quantum state I enter because I'm like, I'm thoroughly in the movie. I'm suspension of disbelief activated. But like, good example is when I go see movies with like Brandon, like we're totally in, we bought in, we're totally there. We're believing these characters, we're believing the world, but we'll also turn to each other and be like, oh, that was a hard cut there. Or we'll be like, oh, look at that. I wonder how they did that. Like every time I'm watching a movie on a sub level, I'm aware of the actors and I'm aware of like the editing and the set design, and I'm like critiquing it all at once.
Sure. I'm also doing that. I'm just like, I'm taking it more as a whole than I am as parts of a whole.
Yeah, I keep mine separate, which is why I never, like, if I'm talking about like how a movie made me feel, I'm never like, well, that was Timothy Chalamet, because that's on a different level for me. It's on an entirely different.
That's
layer, like, is a
like I'm also keeping track of editing and like performances and everything. Like the film school part of my brain is still going, but there's like the like wonder, like magic of the movies part of my brain is just like, okay, this, we're watching this all at once. It is everything everywhere all at once.
That's so weird to be able to say whimsy.
No,
I've been accused of not having whimsy lately.
I mean, other than you liking Tron, which you mentioned this in the last episode that you didn't have a sense of whimsy.
Did I? Yeah.
I mean, you liked Tron, so like obviously there's something deep inside.
I like
you.
little mice with silly noses.
The desert mice.
Yeah.
They're so cute. Do we see any?
We see more mice.
Mouse
is very important.
That, okay, cool. Because so far, the animals of this world, we've seen sandworm, we've seen mouse. Do we see any?
That is most of the animals of this world.
Hell yeah.
There's not a huge ecosystem on this world.
I mean, it's a desert.
The mouse
sense.
Is important. Spoilers. Because Paul ends up getting a Freeman name.
Oh, cool.
And the Freeman name is their name for the small mouse.
Oh, nice. I am very interested to see how the second movie makes me change or solidify any opinions I have on this movie. Because on its own, I think Infinity War isn't like.
Yeah,
I'm gonna
preempt your criticism here because it's what you're gonna be saying.
Yeah,
this I don't think it's fair to ever. I don't think not even that's fair. I don't think it's possible really to criticize this movie as a standalone, because
right.
It does not exist as a standalone. It is just, no one would sit through a 6-hour movie. And that is, when you're making like a very good adaptation of a book, unless it's like Lord of the Rings, where half of it's talking about trees, they're long.
I don't remember a lot of the marketing for this movie. It was marketed. Was it marketed as part one?
Yeah.
Okay. I am far more forgiving then.
Yeah, it was marketed as Dune Part One, and even if they weren't marketing it, even if they didn't say the phrase Dune Part One, it would be Dune Part One. Like there's a second part coming. Like it was always clear he made it clear from the very beginning that this was like one half of the story he's telling.
That makes sense.
Or one half of the book. He's making the other half. God's willing, we'll get Messiah.
Yeah.
God's willing.
He says it's gonna be a minute.
I know it's going to be a minute, but God's willing.
He's like, dude, I've spent too much time in Frank Herbert's world.
God's willing we tie him down and make him make movies till we get to Paul Atreides' half-worm son.
Oh my God.
I think Timothée Chalamet really does a good job in this movie of like starting off as just kind of like, I'm a boy. I'm a man, but I'm still kind of a boy. I don't know what I want to do with my life. I'm a young man of means. And then deals with it as he slowly starts to struggle with the crushing weight of destiny.
Yes, I will say I do like that it's a transition. Like there's no hard pivot point. I mean, a little bit when he puts on the ring, but there's no real like, hard. It's very much a grayscale.
Yeah, there is a point where he tips over in the second movie, but that is for a very like hard reason fact. More than it's not an emotional tipping point. It is the universe acting upon him tipping point.
Okay,
but it feels earned because up to it is that grayscale of a man just kind of struggling to come to terms with this fact.
Yeah.
And I think he does a very good job in the tent conveying the panic and fear Paul has about the Holy War.
That little moment of him just screaming at his mother, like, why did you do this to me?
Yeah.
Like this idea of like, I didn't sign up for this. You signed me up for this.
Cause like Paul is
but then his accepting after.
In the grand scheme, Paul's kind of a villain. He's a tragic villain though. He's a villain via tragedy. It's tragic circumstances that lead him to that. The true villain is the Bene Gesserit. Because like I know they're doing like a spin-off television show with yep. Mark Strong.
Prophecy?
Yeah, which plays into the fact that, no, they're the bad guys. They're just kind of manipulating everything in ways that don't go well.
Is this a thing where we're going to have to watch Prophecy to understand Messiah?
No.
Okay.
Prophecy is just its own thing.
It's completely its own separate thing.
I think it's based off things mentioned in the books, but it's not a book like Dune Prophecy.
Sure.
And I just think I think Denis does a really good job of like showing what needs to be shown and alluding to what needs to be alluded to and never revealing anything too soon so that everything kind of maintains the same feel where you're never like hokey, which I think is a problem a lot of sci-fi runs into.
Yeah, no, this movie works. This movie, I went into this movie not really excited, but with an open mind, and I left this movie more excited for the sequel than I thought I was going to be. So like this movie accomplished all I wanted it to accomplish, but
and I'm interested to see how you view this movie after seeing this.
Yeah, like within the context, because
very much the problem is that this is like this movie's like half of a movie. Mm-hmm. And like any movie you see like the first half you're like okay, because there's like no super payoff and everything. It's all build up. Usually what the first half of a movie is it's a lot of like we haven't even like approached the climax or the rising action of the story. This movie ends with the rising action of the story.
Yes. I think the one exception that comes to mind is Kill Bill Volume 1, yeah. Which is one whole movie, but I think that he cuts it at the exact perfect time that they feel like two complete movies.
Yeah.
Or rather, you can watch one on its own and get a complete story.
Yeah, and this one was always intended, like, you watch both.
Right. Okay. This is just a little side tangent, I guess. The Dune Part 2 has what I think might be one of the only, like, good practical uses of AI in that in the first one, the spice eyes, the blue spice eyes, they hand paint or like hand followed every rotoscoped single frame.
Yeah.
While in 2, they had AI just auto track.
Yeah.
And it saved them thousands of hours.
That is how I think AI should be used in art. Yes. Is not necessarily creating entire pieces of art. And like for a lot of arts, I don't think you should touch. Like a drawing, you don't really need it. But like special effects, when there's one particular thing you need done a bunch of times,
yes,
and it doesn't require any real expertise outside of like what anyone in the field could do, that's when you use it.
You don't use it to correct someone's accent.
Yeah, you don't use it to correct someone. That's a performance. You do it when it's like, okay, like I could rotoscope everyone's eyes in every single frame, or we could have this do it. Because that's what Photoshop is. Like, yeah. It's just a tool at that point.
Yeah. Like, I heard there was a little bit of controversy around that when it got first announced that there was AI used. And then they were like, we literally used it for the blue eyes.
It's no different than using, like, the background select tool in Photoshop at that point.
Agreed.
Just, you click it, you go, replace this.
Yes.
It's just automated tracking. You just, because what they did was probably they said, this is the eye, this is the effect you're going to put on it. Follow.
Yes.
So it still requires, as long as it requires input.
Yes.
And it's just a pencil at that point. Like that, I think you're correct. That is the right way to use it.
Okay. Cool. Glad I got that. Glad I got that out on it, because I truly feared that I was going to forget that for next episode. So I wanted it in this episode just in case. Honestly, might bring it up next episode also.
I mean, I bring up things constantly. I've said in every episode. So
I know, right?
I really like the Duke. I do want to say one of my favorite scenes is the death scene of Duke Atreides in this. I think it's really well done.
I love that scene.
There's the great moment where he's kind of goes like, Baps, yeah. And then you watch the Baron like turn on his shield, because like this guy's naked, fucking like drugged, and he's still like, he could kill me. And that kind of like, that really kind of lends to like the respect and fear the houses have for each other in that moment.
My favorite, that's probably my favorite moment of the Oscar Isaac. If not, my favorite moment is in the very beginning when Paul is like, Grandpa used to chase bulls. And at the end of that scene, Oscar Isaac goes like, even if you don't end up wanting to take over, you still did everything that I needed you to do, which was be my son.
Yeah.
Like there was something just truly, I think it amplifies his character, that there was just something truly pure and wholesome where it's like, you are everything that I needed you to be, which was just you.
Now, like Duke Atreides' wholesomeness provides the much needed backing for the entire like saga, really.
Yes.
Is that everything that is done in his name. And that is where the horror comes from for Paul, is that these visions are done in his father's name.
Right. Is that a thing that happens in like more Messiah, where like there's a more hard comparison between the two, or is that just like a?
It's a narrative comparison.
Okay.
It's never really stated, but it is. That's just
fair.
It's not even like really alluded to in the text, but when you're reading it, you're just kind of like, you remember Duke Atreides, and then you see everything that happens, mm-hmm. and you're like, this is done originally in his name.
Yes.
Pretty much.
I do like the end, like, kind of circling back to Timothée Chalamet's, like, scale. When you mention in the next movie there is, like, a hard cut point, I'm interested to see what that is. But I do think the moment he, like, when he takes Jamis's life, but he's actively for, like, 3 or 4 times just begging this dude to yield. Like, I don't want to do this. Don't make me do this. I don't want to change.
He has two turning points. The first point we see in this movie, which is where he starts to accept the path he's on. And then there is the moment in the second movie where he becomes Lisa Nalagi. He becomes the voice from the outer worlds.
Okay. Like, when he does take the life and his mother isn't, like, either doesn't recognize or isn't ready to accept that her son is becoming who he was always supposed to become, when she's like, no, he needs out with me, and Paul's just like, no, like this is here for a reason, I have to be my dad now.
It's the narrative thread is that he quickly slips outside of like the Bene Gesserit's ideas. Like a lot of the conflict in the second movie, there's not like a big conflict between them, but there is conflict in that he is, that they weren't really aware of what they were fucking with.
Like Paul and Lady Jessica don't know what they're fucking with, or like the Bene Gesserit?
The Bene Gesserit did not know what they were fucking with.
Okay.
The Bene Gesserit were trying to create the one, and they did not truly know what that fucking meant.
Oh, cool. Awesome.
And so the second movie, there's a lot of Lady Jessica being like, and he's like, no, I know.
So I know in like realistic that plane crash would have destroyed the unborn child in Lady Jessica. That becomes a plot point, correct?
What if it was a special baby?
Oh, okay, cool. The whole time I'm like that, like they're crashing. I'm like, I know this isn't gonna kill the baby, but we all know that like this
would have. Yeah, everything's operating on the scale of prophecy. So
yes. I feel like the fundamental flaw with this episode is I haven't seen Dune Part 2.
Yeah.
So I feel like
we're going to start Dune Part 2 the next episode. You're going to be like, woohoo! I get it now.
And like, I could go on, but I feel like a bunch of the stuff.
Much like
that
Dune
I have,
Part 1, you're going to have to listen to the second episode to get any sort of satisfaction from this episode.
That's truly so upsetting. I didn't mean for this to happen.
Just as Paul Atreides does not mean for anything he does to happen, but he has no choice once you know your destiny.
Do we have any more final thoughts?
Nah, you're going to have to listen to part two.
Listen to,
you're going to have to watch Harrison become the Lee Sin-El Gee, Bobby is Stilgar.
So, next week, though, we are doing Tron Legacy.
We are watching, you're going to, much like we had to wait years, you will have
years.
To wait a week.
If the second one rips, I will probably try and carve out some time and watch them as one big movie. Yeah. Honestly, if we wanted to do that, just generally not for the show, just like in life, 100%, I would love to organize that.
Okay. Sounds good. It sounds like amazing. I want to do it definitely before I see Messiah. So
yeah. Do you want to do socials?
Yeah, I can do socials. If you want to find me a chain to destiny like Paul Atreides to paint small plastic men, you can find me at Midwest_magician. You can find the show at Two Men Movie Podcast at Instagram.com. You can find it's a safe place for all Stilgar enjoyers. You can find us on YouTube at Two Men and a Movie Podcast. And everywhere else you'll find us at Two Men Movie Podcast. That's the only one with an A. If you want to email us, I don't know. What do you think? What do you think Baron Hardukin eats? If you want to send us what do you think his daily menu is, you can send that to us at twomenmoviepodcast@gmail.com. Or as always, pictures of Florence Pugh.
Yeah, I was waiting for you to say that.
Or Rebecca Ferguson. Send me your number. So if you got her number, send me it.
Oh my god! If anyone has any contact,
if she's married, I'm gonna be a home wrecker.
No, not in a horny way. I just want to talk to these people about art. Like, if anyone has any contact and people are willing to like go on a podcast with six listeners, like,
and I'm gonna, it's not even in a horny way. I want to be your husband.
Yeah. Okay. Hell yeah. That's twomenmoviepodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah.
You already did. Yes, you did your singulars. You can find me, on Instagram, TikTok, Lemonade, Threads, basically all of the Meta and ByteDance stuff at harrisonpoole.com, HarrisonPoole.com, harrisonpoole.com. Thank you so much to Tristan Hostetter for our theme music. I thank you for listening. I sure hope that my voice wasn't that horrible.
Hugs and kisses. And if you excuse me, I gotta go create some water on my own.
This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.